Welcome to Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is the Invisible Dragon. My name is Clarence Holman, calling you by way of Charlotte, North Carolina, by way of Chicago, Illinois. We got a very good show tonight. And Robert Williams, are you out there? Can you hear me? All right. Well, tonight's show is about several topics, but the main topic is if LeVar Ball is ruining his son Lonzo Ball's career by his greed and some would say selfishness or grandstand. And we want to discuss that as many ways as we possibly can. And I don't know if we're going to make any kind of determination, but we want to at least discuss it because Lonzo has infiltrated the sports world and the open market as well, so to speak, because he's everywhere and he's doing all he can to promote his big baller brand shoe for his son. He's actually trying to get a marketing deal, but he wants to partner with somebody to bring on his big ball of brand, not your typical everyday end to the shoe game. Typically, a guy has to be a star or something like that. Dragon, can you hear me? Hello? Hello? Trying to bring my guest in right now. Robert Williams, can you hear me? All right. And so as the story goes, he was turned down by Under Armour, Nike, and Adidas to partner up with him and branding a pair of shoes for his son, who's Alonzo Ball, supposedly going to be a top five NBA draft pick this year. But it seems like his dad is getting all the airtime. But that still hasn't stopped anyone from saying this kid is not going to be a first-round pick. Can you hear me now? There you go. Can you hear me? All right, can you hear me now? I'm trying to get my co-host in here as soon as I can, but for some reason we have a technical difficulty, so we're just going to forge on until he gets in and we're able to have a discussion about this. Well, my point is a lot of people seem to be mad at LeVar because he actually brought his shoes out on Thursday, I believe, and the shoes are $490. The slippers are $200. And if you wear over size 13, I believe shoes are $100 or $200 more. Well, he's not partnering with anybody. He doesn't have any investing yet because, you know, like I said previously, the top three, Nike, Adidas, and Under Armour, turned him down for a partnering agreement. So as it stands right now, there's no agreement on the table for him. Can you hear me? Can you hear me now? So a lot of people are saying that the father's grandstanding over the father, over the son, and it's hurting his chances for his NBA career. Then a lot of other people are saying, well, the price point of the shoe is just too high. But if you think about it, with all he needs to do, how can he produce the shoe without any corporate help? I hear you now. Are you there? Are you there? So, as it stands, he's doing all of the manufacturing, the distribution, and everything on his own. So I guess what we got to wait and see is how well the sales go after 1 week. Some say you sold 4,000 shoes in a few hours, and others say the shoes haven't sold any at all, or hardly any at all. So that's the obstacle he has, is if he can do it on his own. I think it's a pioneering move, and some people are off-put by his personality. They don't think his personality is advantageous to his son's career, which I think is probably asinine. What we're going to discuss tonight is that, and also we want to discuss the police officer in Texas. Who, yeah, I can hear you now.
All right.
Cool. And that's the Invisible Dragon there. He signed on. And remember, the chat room is open. So not only are we going to talk about Mr. Ball, but we're also going to talk about the murder of Jordan Edwards. And we're going to cover the violence in Chicago, our hometown, as well as healthcare, which is on the ballot this week because we just got rid of the Affordable Care Act, and we traded it in for some dumb Trump, some other stuff, Trump Care. Let's be real, but it's called Trump Care. And the biggest deal that we're seeing so far is the lack of acceptance of pre-existing conditions, or they're saying you can get pre-existing conditions, but the way you get pre-existing conditions on your accounts, you have to kind of bid for them, and you don't know if you're going to be accepted by an insurance company, so you go into a pool on that. But we'll discuss that. Go ahead, Rob. Anything you got to say?
Not much, man. Just happy to be back. And as we work out these blips here and there, but I think we'll be up and running really well in a few days and whatsoever. And again, covering the topics today would be cool because basically I really didn't know much about LeVar Ball. You know, I didn't. I think I may have seen him or he came into play maybe 4 or 5 weeks ago, but I found it interesting. His approach. I don't know if I would.
The rest of America.
Right. I don't know if I would suggest such a hijacking of Nike, Adidas, and all these other shoe companies. And so, you know, as the title, you know, and I wrote the title, you know, as far as is he hurting his son? And not only his son, has he pushed back individuals who may, you know, Stephon Marbury tried to do his own shoe. Seemingly the only person that got his own shoe is some of the best pros, Jordan whatsoever. And I think I saw his son play in the UCLA in the NCAA championship. Personally, I don't see how he's a one or two pick.
But
let's get
some background on him before everybody else comes in. Lonzo Ball was a freshman at UCLA. Last year they were 13-15. This year with him coming on campus, they were 29-3. They played in the NCAA Sweet 16 and got beat by Kentucky. By Fox and Monk, to be exact. But when you look at the game, he didn't look like himself. He didn't look like I had seen him play previously. And it looks like he needs a little pep in himself. But the games that I saw prior to that, he's a great assist man. He has great floor vision. And he looks capable, but we don't know about his oomph. Does he have enough of that? But he looks like he has skills. He got a weird shot, but he's a floor general. So his father comes on, and I don't know who was the first one to get him, and they started asking him questions. So you figure it's 15 minutes of fame. And he said, my son is better than Steph Curry. But he said to me. So and that carried on. He said, I'll beat Michael Jordan. But he said it tongue-in-cheek. And a lot of people took it like, oh, this dude is too braggadocious. And so they checked in on his career. And he said it that he went to Washington State, I believe it was, made the team, and the coach told him he was coming there to score. When he got there, he told him, I just want you to rebound. So I think he scored 2 points a game maybe. So he left there and went to Bakersfield or one of those other colleges out there, and he did a little bit better, but he wasn't big time. So a lot of people feel like he's pushing his kids to do what he's trying to live through his children. And what he said that really got my attention was, why should I give my kids to the NCAA or to the pros for them to use them up and they give them back to me? He said, so what I want to do is build my own brand, in which he started the Big Baller brand. So with all that hoopla, you get this comment he made about LeBron James' son. They asked him a question. He said, I think I don't put as much pressure on my kids because I ain't done nothing. He said, LeBron, he said, I haven't seen many superstars' children supersede their father. And a lot of people took offense to that as if he was talking about LeBron. But LeBron posted a lot of video of his son playing ball. And no one said anything, but Mr. Ball was asked the question he answered to his best ability. So now we move up after the Sweet 16 game that they got blew out by Kentucky, and everybody said, well, this kid can't play. He had a bad game, this is true, but they beat Kentucky a month or two before, and he had like 15 points. I think it was 9 assists and 7 rebounds. And they won. They took the win. But when you saw the game that they lost, his teammates didn't give him much help. A lot of the assists never got completed, and his shot was off. And it was a team effort. They all of them got whooped that day. I see Raheem is trying to call in. Let me give him the number. And I just gave him the number, Dr. Malik Raheem. He's going to call in. So, Rob, let me ask you this. When you saw all this hoopla, and then last week you saw that he actually got the shoes, a prototype of the shoes after being turned down by Nike, Adidas, and Under Armour, what did you think? What was your first reaction to that?
Again, catching up, that dude was pretty egotistical. And there's still this thing that white males make the final decisions on everything, even when we just saw the white males making a decision on women issues. So I think maybe he overlooked that. And he overlooked it to an error, because they took their shoes back from that kid, and it could cost them. More importantly, he has placed a shoe on the market that costs nearly $500. I'm not.
Big Baller Brand. Hold that thought. Malik Raheem. Who's calling in? I'm sorry. 312. Who's calling in?
Hello?
Yes, who's this?
You've been bugging me to call.
Salam alaikum. This is Dr. Malik Raheem, professor at Fresno State, I believe. He can tell you his credentials. Malik, Rob was just discussing how the price point of the shoes may be overextended, and maybe Mr. Ball did not take into account the power of the white male supremacy of this whole issue, saying, well, they own the business, and now you try to take the power from them and wouldn't accept their deal, so you're going to make your own shoe, but you don't have no money. Go ahead, Rob. Go ahead and finish, and we'll let Raheem take off on what you say, okay?
Right. Again, I think that I don't think he played his hand right. And some people can say, oh, man, you shouldn't be dummying down or something like that, or lessening your attitude, even if it's the system of white male supremacy. Okay, I understand that. I'm just simply saying that's a lot of power. And they have the power to withdraw their shoes, and that's what they did. And so, again, I wasn't very, you know, I'm not in the sport as I was. And so all I saw is that I thought he was very egotistical, and probably I have been in my life. But I had read where he said he was something to Michael Jordan. Now,
yeah,
I understand
he could beat Michael Jordan.
Right. And so he also supposedly was playing on a practice team in NFL and over in London. Again, however, I don't think he was the talent that possibly he'd think his kids are. Again, I only saw his one kid, so I can't talk that much on it. I saw his one kid in the NCAA championship, the tournament. I found that if he's going to take his shot, putting the ball in front of him from his waist, I was like, oh, the NBA is much faster than that.
Okay,
there's
but I don't know if we're talking about his shot. I don't know if we're really talking about his shot. We talk about his dad's approach. Malik, I'm sure he'd
point.
Like to get on this conversation. He's still, no one, they all seen that shot. Everybody's seen that shot, and they still say he's a top five NBA draft pick. Now, his last game didn't show that. His last game did not show that, not at all. He looked like an average dude because his team just got bombarded. But he didn't have the people, the horses around him to compete either. Malik, go ahead and let me hear what you guys say about Mr. Ball, and then you can segue into what you think about his son's skills.
Well, I think it's good that any person, especially a black person and a black male, is striving to own their own business and to own their own brand and to control their life. I think that's the most important thing. I think, especially when you're talking about the whole concept of institutional and structural racism and white supremacy, I think it's very important for a black person, especially a black man, to own their own company and own their own business and kind of call their own shots. One of the issues that need to be looked at is it's kind of like a two-pronged thing, is that is he the price of his shoes, is he having the price because of the fact that he doesn't have enough connection to get the product made at a cheaper rate? So, you know, he's passing the cost off to the customers, so therefore his price is high. Or is it that, you know, because when he was going on the radio and he was going on television and he was doing all these different, what people call it, marketing moves, he really was kind of taking attention away from his son and kind of making it about him. And a lot of the stuff he was doing was kind of narcissistic and grandiose. So I'm kind of wondering if that is a factor as far as the price of the shoe. So the real issue I have is I don't know if the brother did a lot of strategic work as far as thinking strategically and doing his research, because when you look at someone like a Stephon Marbury, he did a shoe deal similar to what the Ball's doing. He became an independent man, did a shoe deal, have factories in China. I think the same factory that Nike does, the Jordan brand, and he sells his shoes over in America for like $40. So it's like, and one of the things Marbury did that for was because he didn't want kids, you know, fighting and killing each other over shoes. So it's like now you have, you know, the big baller brand, I guess that's what they're calling themselves, and he wants the people to pay $500 for a pair of sneakers. Now, I don't know. I personally would not pay that much for a pair of sneakers. I look at people funny when they start talking about Jordans, but now Jordans look like a real good deal. So it's like
Let me ask you a question, Malik. Do you own a pair of Jordans?
No.
You never bought any?
No. Have I ever bought
any? You ever bought any Air Jordans?
When they, let me ask you a question. When they first came out, I think I bought a pair for like $78.
Yeah, that's what they cost when they first came out, $60, $70. Let me tell you a quick story. When they first came out, my cousin came to me. He said, man, my son, Lamont, he wants some Air Jordans. I said, oh, yeah. He said, so first thing I did is I took him to the court. And he came back all sweaty, and now he say, Lamont ain't getting them Air Jordans. He said, he can't play a lick. I think the price point is odd at best, but the name Big Baller, you kind of see what audience he's trying to get at too. But I know for sure Stephon Marbury, Shaquille O'Neal, their price point was set lower for the kids who couldn't afford Air Jordans and the Nike Shaq shoe and things like that. So they were brand specific in their price structure as well. Mr. Ball, once he got, I guess he played himself in that. He just knew for sure, and I don't think that train had stopped running. But he thought that Nike, Under Armour, or Adidas was going to partner up with him. But he was asking for too much. Now there's two things going on, rumor wise. Either he sold 4,000 shoes in the first 3 hours, or he sold maybe 400 shoes. Thus far, it's going to come out. The cream's going to come to the top, and we're going to find out. So his arrogance is one thing, and I think the media ate that part of it up. Now you're looking at these shoes, and that's another thing on them. You know, are these shoes worth it? Who's going to buy these shoes? Because everybody's stuck on the price. Now, if he don't have nobody to partner up with, if he's having to do everything by himself, he doesn't have a distribution deal. He doesn't have a merchandise deal. He doesn't have a manufacturing deal in logistics. So he set a date of November to get the shoes out. But then you go to his son and you say, man, he's putting a lot of pressure on him because, you know, he's better than this guy. He's better than this guy. But his last game don't show any of that. His last game is mediocre at best. And Fox and Monk, now here goes the thing that makes me wonder. Fox and Monk have not moved up in the draft. But Mr. Ball hasn't moved down yet. So we're going to wait to see what happens.
But one of the things you got to look that's like a media creation. Well, because you never know who's going to get drafted first until the actual draft. That's just a media creation.
Hey,
until, are
you saying something about my fans who picked Trubisky the other day? Is that what you're trying to
right.
say?
No. That's what I'm trying to say. What I'm trying to say is like, as far as the scouts are concerned, that's a media creation where they say, oh, this person going to go before this person. Because it's like you really don't know. First of all, they got to have a lottery and see who's drafting first.
Exactly.
So
and
like,
they're going to go off need too, right?
Right. They're going to go off a need. So the thing is that I personally have not been impressed with Lonzo Ball, I really haven't. I mean, I'm not saying he could beat me, so that's not saying anything. But I haven't really been impressed with him as far as being a type of player that's going to change the structure of a team that's struggling. I mean, if he went to like a team maybe like Minnesota where it's already talent around him, you know, he might get helped to make to the playoffs. If he went to, like, a New Orleans Hornets to where he got, you know, a talented player around him, like Anthony Davis and Mark Cousins, because he's a passer, he might be able to help them. But
Let me ask both of you this question. How damaging is his father to his draft prospects? Do you think he's damaging his prospect even? Because, you know, he's not going to the combine either.
I think his father is damaging him as far as when he gets to the NBA. Because his father been cash, you know, writing checks that I don't know if he's going to be able to cash. His father been saying that he's better than Steph Curry. His father been saying that, you know, he's been talking about LeBron James. He's been talking about other NBA players can't deal with his son. So, it's like, you know, I've never been at that quality of an athlete. You know, Robert has. But one thing I have known is that when you're at that quality of athlete, you get very competitive. And somebody calling you out like that, you're like, well, we'll see.
Hey, what you say, Rob? What from what you know so far? What do you think? Do you think? How bad do you think it's? I'm not talking about how bad he's damaging his maybe his what am I trying to say? His well, this is what I want to know. I want to know how you think he's going to have to deal with the locker room when he gets to the NBA.
I think the NBA they're more close knit than like the NFL, and so the NBA cats, they're normally, you know, hang together, whatever, get out in the same way. I think professionals accept you no different than, let's take the professor Malik, that they take people as the normal people take people. So if you got a person in the profession that's a bum, I believe the other professionals would not be the bum. And so there's not this big secret to sport. You either can do it or you can't. And so the shoe ain't going to help you. The jersey ain't going to help you. None of that's going to help you. So it's really just, again, decoration. If you could play, we'll see it. I'm saying just the little I saw in the UCLA game. This kid may be a leader, but he's a quiet leader. This kid may be great. He seems to be quietly great. But I only saw one game. But from that,
yeah, I saw several, and Malik said he's seen them a few times. Malik, he ain't buying it. I saw him several times, and I saw a lot of good things out of him. But the thing is, what you just mentioned, he's a quiet leader, and I don't know what he has inside, but I'm pretty sure when he gets to NBA, it's gonna have to come out if it's in him to do it. But let's finish up on this topic.
I don't think it works like that. It doesn't. You it doesn't work like that. I think some people believe it works like that. It doesn't. You're either a pro or you're not. There is no steps to it. That professional league does not operate like that. You either can do it.
They're not babysitting the time.
They don't do any of that. They're going to get rid of you. They go cut you.
Yeah,
so if he goes in there, regardless of his name, there's been plenty of people who were great in college and came out supposedly, no, they cut them. The NBA will cut you. The NFL will give you a couple of years. The NBA will cut you immediately. It's only 12 of them on that roster. They'll cut you in a heartbeat. If that kid goes in there and he's a flop, they're going to cut him immediately. The NBA does not keep bones.
See, that's why I was telling you.
Hey, Malik. I beg to differ because I see quite a few bums playing on the teams I like, but that's another story for another day.
Well, I want to talk about one of the bums playing on my team.
Go ahead, Lee.
He reminds me of Michael Carter Williams. He really does. He reminds me of Michael Carter Williams. When you look at the landscape of the NBA at point guard, it's like going up against people like John Wall, Russell Westbrook, Steph Curry, of Kyrie Irving, they are fast, and then you got other people who are just as good, but they're not as fast, like a Michael Conley Jr. You got a James Harden, but it's like Lonzo Ball is not fast. He's more lengthy. He's more like
he's steady.
Intellectual.
He's steady.
He reminds
he's
me
cool.
of Michael Carter Williams.
I remember him out of Syracuse. And I remember his rookie year. And I don't remember much after that. I remember
it
a few good games and the injury started coming. And also, he started getting the big hit.
It wasn't much after that. He got traded to Milwaukee. He really didn't do much. He did something the first year he was there. Then they got rid of him. They sent him to the Bulls. The first few games he played for the Bulls, he did well. Then he hurt his ankle. And when he came back, he couldn't do anything. Because it's like the thing is, he's not fast. It seems like a person like Rajon Rondo is not fast, but he's intellectual.
There's more similarity. Ball's shot might even be better than Rajon Rondo. But as far as seeing the court and being a good floor general, he got that. But I don't know about the fire. I don't know if he needs fire.
But
I think we're going to see, y'all. We're going to see what he turns out to be.
I think in sports,
his dad.
Go ahead. I think in sports, the only time someone should say, and this isn't a slight, the only time someone should say if someone's fast, if that person's running a 100-yard dash, sport is not built on speed. Sport is built on change of direction. That ball kid does not appear to be able to change directions quickly.
Well, have you seen John Ball play?
I have never seen him
play.
And so what I'm saying, from if I was a scout and I saw him playing that game, I'm just simply saying it's not the case of fast. It's the case of changing direction.
Fast, change of direction. What I'm talking about is I'm looking at these guards that's in the NBA now, the Derrick Roses, the Kyrie Irvins, the Russell Westbrook, the John Wall. They'll take the ball, and they'll be a one-man fast break.
But he looks. But let's be clear. He looks like Rondo.
I'm telling you,
he looks like Michael Carter Williams. I'm trying to tell you, because him and Michael Carter Williams about the same height. Y'all laugh.
He's a lot slighter, I believe, than Michael Carter Williams. Let's circle back on this. Let's get to Jordan Edwards, the kid that was killed by the Dallas, the Texas officer. I'm not sure if it was in Dallas. I believe it was a suburb of Dallas. And the policeman was first put on suspension. He was suspended. And now he looks like he's going to have to go to trial. Do you think it's going to be like all the rest? Or you think down in Texas, Jordan Edwards will get justice? Do you guys know about this, right? You heard about this, right?
Yeah.
What do you think?
I really think I'd be shocked if he doesn't go to prison. I really will. I'd be shocked if he doesn't go to prison.
One guy that comes to mind that went to prison, and that's the guy that killed the boy in Atlanta. He went to prison in Atlanta.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just the things I've been hearing. I mean, he said the car came back at him aggressively. Then they checked his body camera, and they realized that was a lie. And so they locked him up because they saw that the shooting was unjustified, and they charged him with murder. And they usually don't charge a police officer with murder unless it's going to be serious. And then on top of that, now the family's trying to say, well, he has PTSD from serving over in Afghanistan. And so his question is, if he had PTSD, should he even been on the force? And then there's other reports coming out of him being overly aggressive and against other black citizens. He's not looking too good for him.
Rob, what you think? You think this will be another one, or you think this will be the same old, same old?
I really think he's going to prison. Hello?
Pardon me?
Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah, I really think he's going to prison.
Yeah. I'm looking at the other cases, and remember the Mike Brown case from 2 years ago in July. They left the boy outside for 7-8 hours in August, end of July heat. And I knew that was to change the narrative. I knew that was to destroy evidence, blood evidence and things like that, and then to get their story together. And now, all of a sudden, he comes out the woodwork and say he lied. I mean, the other people, I mean, we always think they're lying when they're suspicious. Then they found out Michael Brown was selling or trading weed for cigarillos to the store owner, and they all of a sudden brought that tape out. And I think that helped attain a grand jury from the beginning. And then the DOJ found that it was a disproportionate of justice in Ferguson. I mean, we see all these things, but you never seem to get that justice at the end of the day.
I think one of the things that I think is different about this case is that unlike the other cases, they will have a hard and difficult time putting this young man on trial. See, that's always been the game plan of putting the black victim on trial. But everything I've been hearing about this young man, he's an honor student. He played high school football. He was one of the potential stars of the football team.
Malik,
I mean, it's
give
like,
me one second. I got another caller calling in. I'm going to see. 224, who's calling?
This is Hogan.
Stephen Hogan.
Stephen Hogan, that's correct.
What's up, man? Give me a second.
What's
going on, guys? We're going over the Jordan Edwards case down there in Dallas right now. We probably gonna circle back because I know you're a businessman. I want to hear what you think about some other stuff that we've already discussed. But right now, Malik, go ahead. Take finish up on your thought for me, please.
Yeah, I'm just saying it's like it's gonna be very difficult to put this young man on trial like they've been doing with other past incidents. I'm not saying he has a squeaky clean record, but it's just, you know, he's doing well in school. He's playing on the football team, won the stars. Everyone on the team liked him. It seemed like people in the community liked him. The family was, you know, one of the upstanding families in the community. It's like the evidence. Well, I hate to say the evidence, but the evidence, for the most part, always pointed toward that this was unjustifiable. But to actually lock him up, the police officer up, that's not looking good for that police officer.
Steven, we're talking about Jordan Edwards, the police officer that killed Jordan Edwards. And right now, we're wondering, do you think the Edwards family is going to get justice for the teenager killed? The officer's been fired, and he's going to stand trial. What do you think? Are you familiar with this case?
Yeah, I'm familiar with it. My gut instinct says no. My gut instinct says no. No. My gut instinct says maybe a slap on the wrist, if that. He'll never be a cop again, but I wouldn't expect any jail time. That's just the reality. But again, I'm from Chicago, and if that was happening in Chicago, I put my money on police unions every time.
Yeah, Dallas can be awfully corrupt, or maybe not corrupt, or maybe they're just doing it the way they do it. You know, they got a good boy system down there, and it works for them.
And we see this all the time.
We saw it with Fernandez and Mr. Scott. We forever seeing it. And then what they do is they vilify you and they muddy the water in the grand jury.
Yeah, I was just going to say that.
Friends of the family. I was going to say that.
Regardless, it's a shame that it has to come down to that.
Rob, you still online?
Yep.
What do you think about this Jordan Edwards case?
I agree with Hogan that I don't think a cop can go to jail, at least from the standpoint of who the victim is. So, and that kid, I saw a picture of him today. I think he was standing with his gym room teacher or something. He seemed like a pretty good kid and everything, so it wasn't a case of this throwing the thug or whatever. But I do not believe that cop is going to prison. I'm pretty sure he's not. That's my bet.
Right. See, this is the scary thing to me. And of course, I'm hoping both of the gentlemen, both of the brothers are wrong. But the scary thing is that good money would say they're right. because of the fact that, you know, I'm not a gambling man, and, you know, Rob said he'll put money on it, and unfortunately, he, you know, he'll be the favorite because of the fact that, you know, these kind of incidents have been happening for so long. I remember talking to my son the other day, and I asked him about it. I said, the latest, I couldn't remember the young man's name, so I asked him about the latest incident. He said, which one? Was his response. And so it's like,
this just how old is your son? He's 40? He's 40 already?
He's 23.
He said, which one?
And so it's like, then he kind of said, you know, it's a shame that he has to say which one for clarification. But it's like, that's the actual fact. And then it's like, when you look and see that these things are happening, and see, one of the, I don't know if it's the best thing or the worst thing, is these video cameras now. Because, you know, in the black community, we've been knowing this kind of stuff been happening for decades, but we've never had the evidence. And then it's like, even now that we have the evidence, other people can see how horrible it is, but the cognitive dissonance won't allow them to say that the cop did something wrong. So it's like, I'm discouraged hearing both of the brothers say they don't think the cop is going to go to prison. And, you know, it's not that they're not saying, not that they're saying the cop didn't do anything wrong, but I'm discouraged because it's like, maybe I'm just hopeful and wishful thinking because of the fact that it's like, it's been happening so many times that it's like, you can't bring the young man back. And that family's gonna have that, you know, that hurt for a long time if they ever really truly be able to get over it. But it's like, the thing is that you kind of want to be able to say, finally, you know.
Yeah, they haven't built a dirt campaign on this young man yet. Haven't heard no dirty news about him. So he got a 50-50 chance. With the eye test, but you know the Dallas test don't care nothing about no eye test.
I heard the reports on both Fox News and on CNN of them talking about the young man, and they can't bring up no dirt. Now that don't mean that they not gonna try, but it's like he was sitting in the passenger seat, the car was sitting there, and the police officer started shooting into the car. So it's like it's not, to me, it's like it's not looking too, if it's almost like if you can't get this one a conviction, you never going to get a conviction.
Is there anything that we can do as citizens, as men, as black men, as American citizens, to turn these type of things in our favor? Is it anything we can do? Anybody grab that?
No, I don't think it's. I don't think it's much we can do, because policemen, firemen, they're probably one of the rare, the only two industries that may end up being able to keep a pension, and they're that important seemingly to society. You know, no one wants the fireman to be late to a burning house. No one wants the cop to be late to a crime. So they get this almost this unbelievable pass. And so if a cop specifically hits someone in the head with his, it can be taped. I started to talk about this, and I maybe can show it while I was writing on it, that I said it on Facebook. You can go back. I said, man, the Rodney King normalized public violence now, even though public violence was occurring, but it wasn't being filmed. But the Rodney, when that happened, whites didn't necessarily, I ain't cutting it down race, but whites were like possibly shocked or not shocked. But African Americans, I'm like, oh, that's normal. In Inglewood, growing up, and it wasn't white cops whooping us, it was black cops. So I looked at the system. I look at the system of law enforcement. And so it wasn't the white cat chasing the slave. It was other blacks also. So my point being,
that the country will not allow this feeling that cops are bad. And so we always hear the cops are putting their lives on the line for us. Get out the profession if you have to shoot into a car and kill a 15-year-old kid.
Interesting. You said something. I grew up in the world as well.
Yeah, dead on with that.
Seemed like we were, and it was a smorgasbord, man. If you did something, they'd come at you, and it didn't matter. And the thing you're talking about is the system. The system is broken. Now, we can segue right into this. What about this? All the violence in Chicago? I don't know. I always thought it went on, but now the media has grabbed hold of it, and it's actually making the narrative, or setting the narrative that Chicago is the most violent place in the world. But I'm here in Charlotte right now. We get killings every day, too. The demographic might be different, or the media don't approach it the same way as they do in Chicago. But do you guys think Chicago is the most violent city in America? Or is violence just being cherry-picked for whatever reason?
Chicago's an easy target, man. It's just an easy target, right? What is it, the third largest city, whatever. We're an easy target, man. But, again, I said this years ago. A lot of the Chicago violence that's going on now was when they decided to lock up all the gang chiefs, man. Like, once you start doing that kind of stuff and you don't have what I would call controlled chaos, you got these kids, they've got nothing. They got no one to listen to. There's no more law. There's no more lit. There's no one to hold them accountable. I don't care if you want to call them the bad guys or not. They still held them accountable. When you locked them all up, you let this new age come up, and they're not going to honor shit, and that's just the way it is. So I don't see any way to fix that short of actually tackling poverty at this point. If you don't actually address the underlying issues
you just named something. You just named something in there. I think poverty and violence are first cousins.
Yeah. I mean, that's the only reason a lot of this is going on. Yeah, if you don't start tackling the underlying issue, which is poverty, which spawns all this on.
Why is Chicago targeted, and why are particularly young black males targeted so hard?
It fits the narrative.
The super predator.
Looks good. Sells. Yeah. Well, yeah, there's the super predator theory, but, I mean, it fits the narrative. It looks good, right? I mean, people can accept that. They can digest it easier if you say that. It's harder to digest if you're trying to mix different ethnicities into it. So it's just easier to say it's black males. And, I mean, it is what it is. It sells papers, right? It sells ad space. But I think anybody that really knows it. It's poverty, period. It doesn't matter what ethnicity you are. If you're poor, you're getting it in Chicago. That's just what it is. Whether you're Latino, you could be Indian at this point.
All over.
You would think that there's not.
Yeah,
you can think there's not really. No, that's what I'm saying. It's all over the world. Poverty just spawns violence. That's just what happens when you put people in messed up situations and it's do this or die, or they feel like that's what the situation is. That's what they're going to do. They feel like they're disenfranchised. They don't have a voice. That's what they're going to do. They're going to resort to these types of things. So, again, if you don't start addressing the underlying problems as far as poverty, that seems to be the biggest one to me. There's no jobs. Schools suck. People can't afford to do what they want to do, but they're steady seeing on TV all this great lifestyle, and you can have a piece of the American pie, but for some reason they feel like they're being left out of it. Like I said, I don't condone the actions, but I understand how it happened.
They probably used to – check this out. Malik and Rob, they pretty old. They probably remember this show called Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous.
I remember too.
I'm just curious. Malik, give me something clinical to really tag the subject about the violence, the poverty, the narrative always going toward the so-called ghetto or the underprivileged and the lack of education. Can you tie that all up in one big bundle for me?
Good luck.
In plain terms,
the black the black man and the black woman have had their identity stripped for so long and been replaced with an identity that's been kind of tainted in the sense to where it's like they look at each other as the problem, just like white supremacy and the white structure looks at us as the problem. So the thing is, they want instant gratification. They want the piece of the pie. They want success. And since we're being locked out of the so-called normal way of getting success, a lot of times we turn to other ways to try to get success because we want that instant gratification. Unfortunately, America is not an atmosphere to where you will wait and invest. Because the thing is, if we've been locked out of a lot of the normal, quote-unquote, ways to get success, it's like it's too hard to wait. The school systems are messed up. There's unemployment rampant. There's a lack of resources. So the thing about it is, it's like we go into survival mode. Everybody want to be able to survive. And unfortunately, we've been indoctrinated with these images of success of having big cars, gold chains, jewelry, and things like that. Big ball of gym shoes. And so what happens is... what happens is that we do that by trying to get it by any means necessary, but since we don't have the resources to do it quote-unquote normally, because anytime we try to do it normally, we've been destroyed. You look at Black Wall Street, you look at these other instances like in North Carolina and Arkansas. Even Chicago was devastated when you took away the factories and the Pullman cars have been pulled out. So, like, when you look at all these type of things, you living in a depressed area. Yeah, so, like, you living in these depressed areas, so now you got to find a way to survive. And the survival instinct kicked in, and sometimes it's like you have these negative things come out as far as, you know, how they're going to do things to survive. So with that being said, trying to sound like the common person, not sound too academic, with that being said, what happens is that since we have internalized a sense of hate for ourselves, we don't respect ourselves, so we can't respect anybody that look like us. So it's easy for me to get rid of somebody that don't look like me. So
interesting. Rob, you got anything to look back on that?
I agree again. I don't think this is breathtaking. I think again, like you said, Stephen and Lee, I think it's just the foundations that has been laid for particular groups. And so violence, poverty, that's just sadly, it's just an ingredient, but it's been around for centuries. And I do not believe it's about to go anywhere. What I think we're seeing now, however, is that we're seeing gentrification. And what we're looking at is that they're moving people out to the rural areas now. So it's not that you now in Chicago where they're fixing up downtown and close to that, and then you can move out south. No, man, they're sending you out to rural areas. Chicago will not be having, I've said this maybe 2 years ago, man, you will not be able, they're going to have eye recognition or whatever they call it, where you even go into the loop and you have a former case or been arrested, man, they go zero in and put you out of the downtown area. Your civil rights, all of that, that's going to be a thing of the past. And so, like I said, from what I'm gathering and just looking at research, what they're doing is turning the rural areas into the urban poor areas. So they're moving those, you know, it used to be they would build downtown and then you can walk in. Now they've stretched all of that going down all the way to the hundreds. All the way to the hundreds, they're fixing up Chicago. Yep. So where they're going, to the lake? No, man, they're not going to put them in the lake. They're sending them out to these rural areas, Aurora, Rockford, and all of these places.
Yep. That's really happening.
I want to circle the wagon a little back a little bit. I'm sorry. And I want to ask Steven this. Steve, we were talking about LeVar Ball earlier, and we were talking about his shoes being overpriced, and we were talking about Nike, Under Armour, and Adidas shunning him for his one department with them. And so then people are saying, well, his arrogance is costing these deals, or is his pioneering spirit. I don't know, or maybe just a terrible businessman. But I also see him not having a manufacturing deal. I also see him not having a distribution deal. I also see him not having things in place. And you have to do things yourself that just may not put him in place. But the shoes are on order for November. So when the season starts, he should have shoes. Now, they say he's either sold 4,000 shoes or he sold 400. So what do you think of the issue with these shoes and the price points? I was telling Malik and Rob, I'd say Shaq and Stephon Marbury's price point was to sell to people that couldn't afford the high-priced brands. Well, Big Baller brand is just trying to get out there, and he wants to have his own. He's trying to build his own thing. How do you view this?
Look, first, I've been waiting. I've been thinking about this all day and thinking about the controversy even leading up to it. First off, I don't think even if you want to call his father arrogant, I don't believe it's arrogance that's causing him any deals with Under Armour or anyone else. Because if you're dealing with any of those top brass, any top execs, arrogance is part and parcel of being up there. The problem with what he's trying to do in his price points is there's no proof of product, right? This kid's coming out of college. And at the end of the day, there's been plenty of top draft picks that have gone into the NBA and have done nothing, right? There's nothing that's going to say for me to work with this person. And basically, they're investing their money, which is what you have to remember. It's not his money. They're investing their time, their money, all their resources to do this on a kid that has not proven that he can actually play with the big boys, that he can play with adults. That's great. He can play with kids in college. Right, he has no proof that he can ball with the big boys. We're grown men that have been doing this for years. So if I was sitting there and I'm a top exec, I'm not going to sign that deal either. As far as his price points go, I mean, it's a bold move. It's always good to be ambitious, and you know, everyone tells you dream big, right? If it doesn't scare you, it's not big enough. But again, I think he's unrealistic in the sense of the fact that, again, his son has no proof of product. So at best, he's got a 50-50 shot. And I say less than that. I give him less than 10% that his son gets into the NBA, and within even 5 years, he's something that makes those shoes worth that much money. That's just being realistic about it. As far as his marketing, what do you think about his plan to sell these shoes?
What about that shoe going rogue and selling shoes?
No, I think it. He put the cart before the horse. I understand his ambition. He put the cart before the horse. One, just because he went on TV and made some remarks about his son being better than Jordan, I mean, that's great. I mean, that's good publicity. But at the end of the day, without the proof of product, you just talk. I can talk all day. If I don't have proof of product of anything, you're asking other people to invest their money, and in this case, millions of dollars, into unproven talent in the NBA. That's never going to happen.
Well,
as far as him not getting distribution deals
and
everything
they
else.
They were going to give him millions of dollars. They were going to give him
sure, but not for his own shit.
He's unproven. Hold on. They were going to give him that, but he wanted more than that. He wanted a partnership, which I guess that's why saying, why would I partner
I wouldn't even give him millions of dollars. Anyone that was even going to give him millions of dollars was taking
a chance,
I assure you.
All the top picks are going to get a really good 2 or 3 year gym shoe deal. When Derrick Rose, before he was MVP, he was getting a really nice deal from Adidas. Once he won MVP, of course, it skyrocketed. But a lot of these guys
are trying to do his own shoes. When you start talking about your own.
Hold on. Most of these guys are living off shoe money right now. They're living off endorsement money right now. They're living off loans from the agents right now. And this dude just said, well, y'all don't want me to get that? I'm going to do it myself. So I think it's
no,
a bold
move. That sounds,
and
that,
I don't know.
That sounds very bold. It sounds pioneering. Again, no mentors, no business skills, nothing to back up anything other than to talk. And that's my problem with it. And that's why I give him less than a 10% chance of that doing anything. And it's all based upon his son's performance. That kid tears his knee, a ligament or something, it's over. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, this isn't like he's trying to put up a website, or he's selling some type of.
Let me ask you this. If he sells the shoes and he got two more kids coming out, and Big Baller Brand is selling 4,000 shoes a year, 10,000 shoes a year.
I got to stop you because you already said
I'm just
it.
Saying. I mean, he
and
can broaden his brand
right.
after that.
I mean, anything can.
So
yeah,
you
but you still
bad,
got
you
to do the if. It's a terrible idea. You are, if you have to go into it talking about if already, if. Well, if, but man, if, there's always ifs. Sure, you want to be optimistic, but your business plan, your model behind it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense on paper, let alone in practice. It doesn't. The numbers don't add up. Like, you have to think of economic injury, right? What you're putting into it versus what you're going to get out of it. Now, right now, only thing he's really put into it is talk, right? He's got no distributors. He doesn't even have one shoe name.
Right,
he's got a prototype. Okay, he's got prototypes.
Let me
do it like this. Let's break it down to something smaller. Say we're doing T-shirts, right? Like, just cut all the bullshit. We're making T-shirts. We're making graphic design T-shirts, right? We don't really have a customer base. We're just like, we just want to get an idea of whether we can get this customer base or not. But we're going to use this guy, and he's got a face out there. We're going to put these T-shirts out there, right, and see if we can get these orders in. Well, that's all dependent on whether, say, I'm a runner, right, and I'm supposed to be this fastest guy on the planet. And as you're trying to get investments and you're trying to get this money to, which either someone's giving him money or he's using his own money, and I run out there and I twist my ankle and I'm out for the year, or worse, I tear my knee up. There's no more ifs. That once that happens, that's it. There's no more, well, if this other guy comes out, that's it. So he's got to understand, this is the thing about branding. If this is branding for his son, then that means that the entire company is hinging on his son's performance. Now, if he's creating a gym shoe brand that's just a gym shoe brand, then he's going about it all wrong. He needed to pick and choose. If this was about his son and branding his son, and his son is the face of this brand, like, say, Jumpman, Michael Jordan, that's something different. But if he's talking about he's trying to have a gym shoe company, he's branding it all wrong. Because right now, it's totally
hinged
on his son.
You think this is a bum mission? You think he ought to go back?
I think he's trying to do both.
Hold on.
Go ahead.
He should go back to Under Armour, Nike, and Adidas and say, maybe I bit off more than I can chew. Maybe I will take your deal.
Yeah, because you know what he could have done that.
Who else think he should go back to the drawing board?
I think again is seeing he's thinking practically. I think again I wasn't that involved with it, but again I'm just amazed at a $400 shoe plus, and I'm amazed that I'm simply amazed that be that as it may, I'm just amazed in that. I think he went in, and he went in with no safety net.
Track record. No. Yeah.
No.
He went in with no net. So whatever's coming down is going all the way through the dirt.
Jobs, at least they have some bank. They had a little bit of bank, a little startup money.
Well, if he takes a risk, and which is perfectly good, if he takes that risk, it's nothing wrong, because you will not accomplish anything if you don't take a risk. This risk seemed to have been hasty. That's all.
Yes, that's putting it nicely. That's putting it nicely. First off, again, he doesn't understand branding. He needed to decide, is he trying to create a gym shoe brand, or is he trying to brand his son? What is this? What is Baller Shoe?
Now,
what is that?
Is that a gym shoe brand? Hold on. No, it's a whole brand. They got T-shirts, hats. It's a sports apparel line.
that he's brand.
Okay, so then who gives a shit about his brand?
Check it out. His intention,
what's the quality of the shoe?
Was,
why is it any better than any other
shoe?
Hold on. You see what I'm saying?
Hold on. His intention was to have a sports brand. And he thought that the big boys was going to say, well, yeah, I like it. Come on in, man. Come on with us.
No.
And then his expectation got just trampled on because they say, no, man, we can't do this. This is too much. So now
it's not even the price. The price point just makes it worse. The price point just made it worse. Again, when you're doing something, what is unique about your shoe? What, just because you call it Big Ballers? And again, if the brand is just about the shoes, then the shoes need to be of some type of quality. It can't even be about his son. That's the point. His branding is just off. If he had anyone in his corner to help him with branding, they would have told him in the door, look, you need to choose. What is this about? What is your business? Is your business your son, or is your business apparel? Because if it's apparel, you're doing
this all wrong.
Sports, if
it's
your son,
it's
you're
a,
doing
it's
it right.
Sports apparel company.
Nobody gives a shit then. Who cares? Who is he? What is his background in shoes? Right.
But he's not just trying to put a brand out there. And that's why they shunned. But we'll just have to see where that goes. I was interested in hearing your point about this because
I felt like that would be the first thing I asked. Hold on.
I was feeling like you had something to say that might have been different, and maybe that you had something to say that maybe gave you a foundation to say, man, that's the worst deal I ever seen. Or maybe it's some possibility that you gave it 10%.
I get where you're going, stretching it. Yeah, I'm stretching it because the first thing any consultant's going to tell them, your branding is off. He has no brand. All he has is a name and a logo. He does not have a brand.
Right.
What is his brand? What does it represent?
50-50 chance of failing or making. Now, we got this other 50, subject 50, we want to talk about.
Okay, I have a question.
We got another subject.
I have a question.
The other subject is healthcare.
Hold on.
We just had the Affordable Act here kicked out.
Before you move on, we got somebody's got a question. Before you move on, I have a question.
All right.
Go ahead.
Can the gentleman please explain what he means by brand?
Okay. By brand, Steven. I'm saying, okay, so for myself, my name is Stephen C. Hogan, right? I am my brand. When people buy into my brand, they buy into me. They buy it. They trust that what I say is something that's legit that they can bank on, right? I am not a logo. I am not a gym shoe. I am not a shirt. I am not a fitness apparel. I am not a tree shrub hedger. I'm not any of those things. I am me. They are buying into me. So whatever it is that I'm doing, good or bad, is what's affecting the brand, which is me, which is also the people around that. Now, if I am a brand in the sense of I've got my shaker here that's got my pre-workout drink in it, I sell pre-workout drink shakers, right? That is my brand. Now, that's got a logo. Now, I have to bring something that is specifically unique about this because guess what? There are many other shakers out there. Right?
Right.
What is going to make my shaker stand out from other pre-workout mixer shakers? That is how you brand. Now, if he's branding his son, then he needs to be branding his son as something that is this great, unique talent that maybe he deals with kids and he does all these other things that make him just an amazing person that other kids want to live up to, and that's why they want his stuff.
Right.
If you're not branding it that way, then your stuff needs to be something that is cool that other kids just want to wear, and you're basically paying other cool athletes that are already established to wear your stuff, like Under Armour or Nike. Right.
Now my,
so he doesn't have a good target audience to work with.
My next
he has
question
no
is
brand.
This. Do you think Malik, go ahead. Do you think all the appearing on like ESPN, on Fox Sports, and kind of just taking over, making everything about him, hurting his brand?
No, if he was trying to sell shoes or sell himself, he is a brand. Right now, I feel like he's a bigger brand than his son. Right?
Okay.
He could brand himself.
But if it's about
his son, He's killing his son's brand because he's making himself bigger than his son. He's getting more spotlight than his son.
Okay.
You think he's doing it or is the media doing it?
You can't blame the media for his dad going on TV. That's not the media's fault. He needs to shut up and sit down.
He's overshadowing his son. He should say, no, I can't go. I can't go. It's too much. You think that was in bed?
Yeah, he needed – I think at this point, that train's already left the station. The train's left the station, man. The train has left the station. Especially once they started big baller shoes, whose concoction was that? You can tell he has no mentors. He's just like, you know what, I'm just going to do this. And that's cool. That's great. I encourage that for a lot of people, but he needed mentors. He needed
brand already existed. The Big Baller brand already existed. The gym shoes are the new attraction to the Big Baller brand.
Yeah, I don't know.
I agree with you on that he'd been branded himself. And I think if he had been more skillful, he would have been branding that Big Baller brand. Well, he kind of was, but it always turned into conversations about things on the exterior of that.
He should have let his son get into the league first. Yeah, he needs to let his son get into
the league first. Big Baller
they could have
brand,
taken the
he's
Nike
been,
or
he's
Under
been,
Armour.
He's been selling apparel. He's been selling stuff already. The Big Baller brand.
No, I understand.
Just the shoes.
I understand 100%.
So maybe he needed to fall back. Understood his audience. And what he could possibly do.
Yep.
And
we're
gonna see what's happening. I'm gonna write this thing down. I'm gonna see how he do. I think I'm gonna have to call you.
Yeah, 10%
I'm gonna get in contact with him on Twitter.
Do it.
And tell him
he needs to talk to me.
Tell him he's going about.
Yeah, he's messing
hey,
up.
Hey, back what you did. He need to call you and tell you, hey.
I can fix his business plan in probably 20 minutes. I could fix his entire business plan because it's got such glaring holes. It would not take me much time at all. It's bad.
All right, let's get on with our last subject.
All right.
All right, yeah. Let's get on to this last subject. We got about 15 minutes left, and
let's get it.
We know that Obamacare, which is the Affordable Care Act, has been is going to be overhauled or abolished. We don't know that yet. But Trump Care just came, and people are really crying about it, even people that kind of voted for Mr. Trump. So what do you guys think about this new health care system that's coming in?
I'm going to let you guys go first. I'm going to play devil's advocate on this one. Meaning I'm going to agree with Trump.
Rob?
Let me just put that out there now. No.
Go ahead. Rob?
What's that?
What do you think about the new Trump Care and the new health care reform with Trump Care and the Affordable Care Act, alias Obamacare, going out? What do you think? What do you think is going on with this?
I think it's just a bunch of wealthy people trying to decide how to not let the poor drown completely. These are wealthy men who remain in office for untold years, and there's no term limits, and so they're cutting their deals on Obamacare and every other legislation. It's a racket. There's nothing more than that. I think what we do in America is that we look at America as this beaming light. Yeah, man, a beaming light of exploitation. You know, so whenever you're dealing with America, it's empire. They're made to come out on top. And if not, they then bring out the gun. So what they're doing with the health care is they're getting their pockets filled, and they're going to throw whatever it is in our face to simply say, hey, man, take it or leave it. That's my perspective on it.
Anyone else?
What'd you say, Malik?
Well, I think all this is about racism. This whole thing.
It always is. About, okay.
Hold on. The thing is this. It's like, I'm not saying the Affordable Care Act was perfect, but if you really are concerned about health care and you really are concerned about people having health care, access to health care, you fix what you already have. You don't go around and just try to repeal everything and say, no, this ain't going to work, throw everything out. Now, I don't know all the ins and outs. I've been hearing reports on the media, and I'd rather see what really is there. I'd rather wait for the independent source to come out and say this is what's actually in the bill. Because, you know, depending on where you listen as far as the news media, it tells you something good, tells you something bad. So I don't want to get too worked up about that. But I think this is just a push. Because if you look at everything that President Trump has been doing, he's been trying to do everything to up, to end any type of legacy that President Obama had. I'm not the biggest President Obama fan, but what I'm saying is that's why they continuously call it Obamacare. It's not Obamacare. It's the Affordable Care Act. So the thing is that it's been helping a lot of people. Now, whether it's going to implode or not, I don't know, because it's been who you listen to. But what I am going to say is that this is about the whole thing of trying to eliminate the whole legacy of President Obama. This is one of his biggest accomplishments, and they came in trying to eliminate that. So it's like, if you believe in some of the things that they're saying, pre-existing conditions are not going to be covered. And that was one of the main stickler points as far as why a lot of people really liked the Affordable Care Act. So if you really, really are concerned about health care, you really are concerned about trying to save people, it's something, because there's no bill that's just totally perfect. And there's very few bills that are totally imperfect. So what you could do is you could just come in and you could fix what's already there, because you already have a foundation. Why reinvent the wheel? You already have health care for all already there. So the things that you don't like, you can straighten out and fix. And the things that you do like, you can keep. But what they're trying to do is they're trying to repeal it, overhaul it, so it's almost like it never existed, and then put their system in a place that's almost totally opposite of some of the things that they had for the Affordable Care Act. So to me, honestly speaking, I personally feel that if the things that they're saying about the Trump Care Act or whatever they want to call it is really there, a lot of people are going to be in serious trouble. You're not going to cover mental health services. You're not going to cover substance abuse services. Right. Insurance got a right to say that if you're pregnant, they don't have to cover you. Certain diseases you don't have C-section. To get covered. So it's a lot of things that can is really, really troubling. Just like Rob said.
How does racism tie into that?
How does racism
because
tie into that?
Because it's built into the system. Because first of all, he kept saying Obamacare. Well, that's not the name of it.
Right.
And that goes back to what you were talking about earlier. That's Brandon.
You have a lot of his supporters who don't even know Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act are the same thing, because they kept trying to say Obamacare. But the thing about it is this why it's race. You have the first black president, and you're trying to do everything you can to take away everything that he had. And one of the biggest things is the Affordable Care Act. So what you're going to do is you're going to try to eliminate it. If you really want to fix it, you fix it. You don't eliminate it. That's common public policy. Unless something is just totally out there wrong. But it's not totally out there wrong, because the policy, while it had holes in it, the policy was fixable.
The first thing I said, my wife asked me, she said, so what do you think? And I'm stupid, you know. I said, well, I think what they're going to do is keep all the good stuff from the Affordable Care Act and add some changes and then dress it up and call it something new. That was my first thought of what they would do. And now that I see all the stuff that's in the bill that I've read so far, and it's kind of ridiculous. And I think it's a travesty, and a lot of people don't want the Affordable Care Act back. Go ahead, Stephen.
All right. Well, just to slightly cover the racism thing, just my perspective of politics is that while racism is definitely used as a way to garner votes and support, I don't see politicians in terms of being racist. I see Democrats and Republicans, and that's pretty much it. They're gangs to me, right? And so in any type of gang, they're going to try and get anyone on board that they feel like is going to become a member and help support the gang and filter in money and pay dues, right? So, yes, they're trying to get rid of Obama's legacy. Are they using racism and probably other things, xenophobia and all kind of other shit to get that to happen? Yeah, sure. And to appease their base, you can bet money on that. As far as the Trump care, and I also agree with the fact that I don't think the Affordable Care Act was all that bad. There was a lot of things that I felt like, yeah, they kind of rushed into that trying to put something together. I don't think that's something that you can put together very easily, as it's never really been done before. But overall, I give it like a C, right? I would have gave it a C. As far as what Trump's trying to do, I feel like I hate to say this with Trump, but I feel like you got to at least give it a shot. Because the whole goal is to make it competitive, right? You got to get – well, I'm playing devil's advocate here. Just work with me here. So right, because everybody can just be like, fuck Trump, and it would be the end of the conversation. So I'm going to try and give it some spice. So the whole goal is to try and get these insurance companies to start being more competitive and therefore dropping rates and maybe even deciding on themselves to start allowing some of these pre-existing conditions to not be – reasons to penalize people that are getting it, right? So if every insurance agency is penalizing these things, it would behoove me, again, if I was consulting any insurance agency, to be like, well, why don't you start including some of these? What are some of the minor ones that you can include that aren't going to really necessarily raise your cost, that aren't happening as much, and let them pick and choose which pre-existing conditions they wish to allow, right? Which in the end would then kind of start to begin to create a sense of competition, in the sense of, well, they're allowing this, well, maybe we should allow that, because I don't want this insurance company to be allowing this and we're not. And now they're getting all these people that have these pre-existing conditions, and they're getting this life, or they're getting this insurance, this medical insurance. So there is a way in which, by doing that and allowing insurance companies to pick and choose which pre-existing conditions they wish to cover, starts to create that competition. Now, that's in theory. That's
all right.
We'll see in practice whether that works.
Let me interject. Why don't we just get what they got? Why don't we just get what they got? They don't have to go through all that.
No.
And if their family has pre-existing conditions,
that's why I said
we're good to go.
Not dealing with that. They're game banging. They're at the top of the hill. They're not at the bottom. They're not going to take that. They're delegating.
Hillary Clinton was actually in charge of the health care reform when her husband was in office, but nobody wanted to work with her. And so in certain states, they picked up some similarities of what actually became the Affordable Care Act. I don't think you're kind of saying, let's give them a chance and let them self-regulate themselves. Well, they've never done that before.
Well, that's why I said in theory, it sounds good.
Okay.
Yeah, in a capitalistic state. Yeah, I'm just trying to do. Like I said, I'm throwing shit at the wall right now. In theory, that's how it should work, right? We live in a capitalist nation like this. Everything runs on money. We're supposed to be letting ourselves regulate and monitor ourselves, and the markets dictate what has value, right? So if the markets dictate it, and we just wipe all the table clean, look, you guys are going to decide what you're going to want to cover. At some point, at least one is going to be like, okay, let's pick this one out of the pile and start getting the people that have these pre-existing conditions. And I guarantee you, another one's going to do it. And then they're going to be like, okay, well, they got that. They only have one. We're going to take two. We're going to take these two. Well, they're doing with two. Well, we're a startup. We're trying to be more competitive with these biggers. We're going to take five. Okay, they're going to take five. And this is all in theory. Doesn't mean that it's going to be some landslide and all of a sudden every insurance company is going to take every single pre-existing condition and ta-da, we all have what we wanted in the first place. But in theory, the markets usually dictate these things. They usually balance themselves out. The money's going to go to the path of least resistance. Well, I mean,
as far as healthcare goes, in theory. Theory don't work for real people when they get sick and their child has to go to get health care. For things, go to the emergency room, get cancer, emergency surgery. Theory don't work for that. And I understand what you're saying.
So then the only way that you can fix that then is to then, like you said, you set in place some types of regulations or something. Like I said, to me, I always have to, as an entrepreneur, I always have to go back to the market. Like, I have to believe in that. So I have to believe that even if... Go ahead.
Hey, Malik, I'm going to let you finish. Let Rob, I want to end with Rob.
Let me say something real quick. You have
Donald Trump. Go ahead.
You having Donald Trump eliminate all the regulations. He eliminating regulations on
EPA.
So now you want me to trust. Now you want me to trust the insurance companies to have a conscience and say, you know, maybe we should cover some of these people with pre-existing conditions. The insurance company's main purpose is to make money. It's not to really insure you and make sure you got proper health care. It's to make money. They want to insure you at
correct.
The least amount of cost for them. So the thing is, they're going to try to make money. That's what they're in for. Just like a pharmaceutical company, they're in for the money. So the thing is, it's been proven with mental health services. They cover mental health services. They got managed care. It's next to impossible to help anyone with just 8 or less sessions. But that's all they'll cover. Because they say, we're just going to cover this. So the thing is, now you're trying to convince me, give Trump a chance, and then maybe the insurance company's marketing regulation the market will regulate itself, and they'll say, you know, I feel bad for these people. Maybe I will cover people who have breast cancer coming in. Maybe I will cover people who have diabetes. So
okay,
you really
this is what happens then.
Executives are going to have
if you're going to compare that, if you're going to compare that to the EPA or anything else, and you have to look at how these businesses actually work. In order for an insurance company to make any money, they actually have to have customers, all right? And they have to have customers that can afford the insurance. So now every single person that is on hold on. If every single person that's on that list, there's probably the majority of people on that pre-existing list, you got to probably at least 40% of the country's got at least one of those things, or in the near future at some point will have one of those. Now, if insurance companies aren't covering any of those, what are the chances they're going to have customers paying the money? Where do the insurance companies get their money from? People buying insurance, right?
Okay.
So if they're not covering any of that, so what I'm saying is they have to self-regulate, because if they don't, they don't get customers.
That's not going to ever work.
Because
we don't self-regulate
in America. Was so unhappy with the Affordable Care Act was is because he gave subsidies for the elderly and for the pre-existing conditions to get insurance. So the insurance company was losing money because they were spending money for people to go to the hospital. So what they're doing with this Trump Care is they're making sure that the people who are young and that don't have any pre-existing conditions be able to get insurance at a lower price, because then they can pay insurance for a longer period of time without going to the hospital. But now the people who are over 40, 50, or 60, their premiums are going to go up. So that's how they're going to make their money. They start you off young so you can be paying insurance for a longer period of time. And don't
but the thing is,
we got 90 seconds left. And maybe we'll carry this on another day.
That's
in fact, once we gather some more information on this Trump Care, the new guy care or whatever, we'll cover it more fully, and then we're gonna run the docket on Mr. Ball and see what his brand is. We're gonna keep an eye out for this case with Jordan
10% check.
Jordan Hayward's family. We're gonna make sure that we keep an eye out for this case as well. And what we Jordan Edwards, I'm sorry. And we're gonna keep these shows going. We're not gonna miss a week. We're gonna keep it rolling, and we're gonna have some guest hosts. And if you guys want to support it, you know, hey, we're gonna run.
You already know.
Rob, you got anything to say? We got about 30 seconds to a minute left.
No. Just looking forward to tomorrow.
All right. Well, guys, this was damn engaging. I think we all picked up something. We all disagreed on something. We all are better for this conversation. It was it was very fiery. Some stuff we're going to have to get on at a later date and time. I appreciate everybody coming out. That's Clarence Holman, Robert Williams, Stephen Holden, and Dr. Malik. Raheem.
Good.
He got that wallet, though. He got that wallet. Let me stay on that wallet, Raheem. All right, y'all.
No.
I'm out.
All right, guys.